Chapter 85.
That and much, apostrophe interrupted Jonas.
Right. Quite right. Apostrophe retorted Tig.
And hard it is upon the part of the law, that it should be so confoundedly down upon us unfortunate victims, when it takes such amazing good interest for itself from all its clients. But charity begins at home, and justice begins next door.
Well, the law being hard upon us, we're not exactly soft upon B, for besides charging B the regular interest, we get B's premium, and B's friends' premiums, and we charge B for the bond, and, whether we accept him or not, we charge B for inquiries.
We keep a man, at £1 a week, to make him, and we charge B a trifle for the secretary.
And in short, my good fellow, we stick it into B, uphill and down dale, and make a devilish comfortable little property out of him.
Ha, ha, ha. I drive B, in point of fact, apostrophe said Tig, pointing to the cabriolet, and a thoroughbred horse he is.
Ha, ha, ha. Apostrophe, Jonas enjoyed this joke very much indeed. It was quite in his peculiar vein of humor.
Then, apostrophe said Tig Montague, we grant annuities on the very lowest and most advantageous terms known in the money market, and the old ladies and gentlemen down in the country buy 'em.
Ha, ha, ha.
And we pay 'em too, perhaps.
Ha, ha, ha.
Apostrophe, but there's responsibility in that, apostrophe said Jonas, looking doubtful.
I take it all myself, apostrophe said Tig Montague. Here I am responsible for everything. The only responsible person in the establishment.
Ha, ha, ha. Then there are the life assurances without loans, the common policies.
Very profitable, very comfortable.
Money down, you know, repeated every year, capital fun.
Apostrophe, apostrophe, but when they begin to fall in, apostrophe observed Jonas.
It's all very well, while the office is young, but when the policies begin to die, that's what I am thinking of.
Apostrophe, at the first start, my dear fellow, apostrophe said Montague, to show you how correct your judgment is, we had a couple of unlucky deaths that brought us down to a grand piano.
Apostrophe, brought you down where?
Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Jonas.
I give you my sacred word of honor, apostrophe said Tig Montague, that I raised money on every other individual piece of property, and was left alone in the world with a grand piano. And it was an upright grand too, so that I couldn't even sit upon it.
But, my dear fellow, we got over it. We granted a great many new policies, that weak liberal allowance to solicitors, by the by, and got over it in no time.
Whenever they should chance to fall in heavily, as you very justly observe they may, one of these days, then apostrophe he finished the sentence in so low a whisper, that only one disconnected word was audible, and that imperfectly. But it sounded like bold.
Apostrophe, why, you're as bold as brass.
Apostrophe, apostrophe said Jonas, in the utmost admiration.
A man can well afford to be as bold as brass, my good fellow, when he gets gold in exchange.
Apostrophe, apostrophe cried the chairman, with a laugh that shook him from head to foot.
You'll dine with me tomorrow?
Apostrophe, at what time?
Apostrophe, apostrophe asked Jonas.
7.
Here's my card.
Take the documents.
I see you'll join us.
Apostrophe, apostrophe, I don't know about that, apostrophe said Jonas.
There's a good deal to be looked into first.
Apostrophe, you shall look, apostrophe said Montague, slapping him on the back, into anything and everything you please.
But you will join us, I am convinced.
You were made for it.
Bully me.
Apostrophe, obedient to the summons and the little bell, the waistcoat appeared.
Being charged to show Jonas out, it went before, and the voice within it cried, as usual, by your leave there, by your leave.
Gentlemen from the boardroom, by your leave.
Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Montague being left alone, pondered for some moments, and then said, raising his voice,
is Nadget in the office there? Apostrophe, apostrophe, here he is, sir. Apostrophe, and he promptly entered, shutting the boardroom door after him, as carefully as if he were about to plot a murder. He was the man at £1 a week who made the inquiries. It was no virtue or merit in Nagit that he transacted all his Anglo-Bengali business secretly and in the closest confidence, for he was born to be a secret. He was a short, dried-up, withered old man, who seemed to have secreted his very blood, for nobody would have given him credit for the possession of 6 ounces of it in his whole body. How he lived was a secret, where he lived was a secret, and even what he was a secret. In his moldy old pocketbook he carried contradictory cards, in some of which he called himself a coal merchant, in others a wine merchant, in others a commission agent, in others a collector, in others an accountant, as if he really didn't know the secret himself. He was always keeping appointments in the city, and the other man never seemed to come. He would sit on change for hours, looking at everybody who walked in and out, and would do the like at Garraway's, and in other business coffee rooms, in some of which he would be occasionally seen drying a very damp pocket handkerchief before the fire, and still looking over his shoulder for the man who never appeared. He was mildewed, threadbare, shabby, always had flue upon his legs and back, and kept his linen so secretly buttoning up and wrapping over, that he might have had none perhaps he hadn't. He carried one stained beaver glove, which he dangled before him by the forefinger as he walked or sat, but even its fellow was a secret. Some people said he had been a bankrupt, others that he had gone an infant into an ancient chancery suit which was still depending, but it was all a secret. He carried bits of sealing wax, and a hieroglyphical old copper seal in his pocket, and often secretly indented letters in corner boxes of the trysting places before mentioned. But they never appeared to go to anybody, for he would put them into a secret place in his coat, and deliver them to himself weeks afterwards, very much to his own surprise, quite yellow. He was that sort of man, that if he had died worth a million of money, or had died worth twopence halfpenny, everybody would have been perfectly satisfied, and would have said it was just as they expected. And yet he belonged to a race peculiar to the city, who are secrets as profound to one another as they are to the rest of mankind. Mr. Nagit, apostrophe said Montague, copying Jonas Chuzzlewit's address upon a piece of paper, from the card which was still lying on the table, any information about this name, I shall be glad to have myself. Don't you mind what it is? Any you can scrape together, bring it to me, Mr. Nagit. Apostrophe, Nagit put on his spectacles, and read the name attentively, then looked at the chairman over his glasses, and bowed, then took them off, and put them in their case, and then put the case in his pocket. When he had done so, he looked, without his spectacles, at the paper as it lay before him, and at the same time, produced his pocketbook from somewhere about the middle of his spine. Large as it was very full of documents, but he found a place for this one, and having clasped it carefully, passed it by a kind of solemn legerdemain into the same region as before. He withdrew with another bow, and without a word, opening the door no wider than was sufficient for his passage out, and shutting it as carefully as before. The chairman of the board employed the rest of the morning in affixing his sign manual of gracious acceptance to various new proposals of annuity purchase and assurance. The company was looking up, for they flowed in gaily. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.